Chapter 38. The 11 months spent in the monastery of the Oblates of Mary Immaculate were among the greatest favors God had granted me. No testimony whatever could have convinced me that the monastic institutions were not one of the most blessed of the gospel. But just as the eyes of Thomas were opened only after he had seen Christ's wounds, so I could never have believed that the monastic institutions were of heathen and diabolical origin. If my God had not forced me to see with my own eyes their unspeakable corruptions. Though I remained for some time longer a sincere Catholic priest, I dare say that God Himself had just broken the strongest tie of my affections and respect for that church. Long before my leaving the Oblates, many influential priests of the District of Montreal had told me that my only chance of success, if I wanted to continue my crusade against the demon of drunkenness, was to work alone. At the head of the French Canadian curates who thus spoke was my venerable personal friend and benefactor, the Reverend Mr. Brassard, curate of Longueuil. He had not only been one of my most devoted friends and teachers when I was studying in the College of Nicolet, but he had helped me with his own money to go through the last 4 years of my studies. No one had thought more highly of the Oblates of Mary Immaculate when they first settled in Canada, but their monastery was too near his parsonage for their own benefit. His sharp eyes, high intelligence, and integrity of character soon detected that there was more false varnish than pure gold on their glittering eucheton. Several love scrapes between some of the Oblates and the pretty young ladies of his parish had filled him with disgust. But what had absolutely destroyed his confidence was the discovery that Father Giguère's, the superior, was opening the letters of Mr. Brassard, which many times had passed from the post office through his hands. That criminal action had come very near to being brought before the legal courts by Mr. Brassard. This was avoided only by Father Giguère's acknowledging his guilt, asking pardon in the most humiliating way before me and several other witnesses. Long before I left the Oblates, Mr. Brassard had said to me, "The Oblates are not the men you think them to be. I have been sorely disappointed in them, and your disappointment will be no less than mine when your eyes are opened. I know that you will not remain long in their midst. I offer you in advance the hospitality of my parsonage when your conscience calls you out of their monastery." I availed myself of his kind invitation on the evening of the 1st of November, 1847. The next week was spent in preparing the memo which I intended to present to my Lord Bourget, Bishop of Montreal, as an explanation of my leaving the Oblates. I knew that he was disappointed and displeased with the step I had taken. This did not surprise me. I knew that those monks had been imported by him from France, and that they were pets of his. When I entered their monastery 11 months before, he was just starting for Rome, and expressed to me the pleasure he felt that I was to join them. My reasons for leaving, however, were so good, and the memo I was preparing so full of undoubted facts and unanswerable arguments, that I was pretty sure it would appease the wrath of my bishop and gain his esteem more firmly than before. I was not disappointed. A few days later, I called upon his lordship and was received very coldly. He said, I cannot conceal from you my surprise and pain at the rash step you have just taken. What a shame for all your friends to see your want of consistency and perseverance. You have lost the confidence of your best friends by leaving, without good reasons, the company of such holy men. Some bad rumors are already floating against you, which give us to understand that you are an unmanageable man, a selfish priest, whom the superiors have been forced to turn out. I remained perfectly calm. I had in advance resolved to hear all his unfriendly, insulting remarks, just as if they were addressed to another person. I answered, "My lord, please read this important document, and you will see that I have kept my good name during my stay in that monastery." I handed him the following testimonial letter, which the superior had given me when I left. I, the undersigned superior of the noviciate of the Oblates of Mary, Immaculate at Longueuil, do certify that the conduct of Mr. Chenecky, when in our monastery, has been worthy of the sacred character which he possesses, and after this year of solitude, he does not less deserve the confidence of his brethren in the holy ministry than before. We wish, moreover, to give our testimony of his persevering zeal in the cause of temperance. We think that nothing will give a character of stability to that admirable reform and to secure its perfect success than the profound reflections and studies of Mr. Chenecky, when in the solitude of Longueuil, on the importance of that work. T.F. Allard, Superior of the Noviate, OMI. It was really most pleasant for me to see that every line of that document, read by the bishop, was blotting out some of the stern and unfriendly lines which were on his face. Amiably he handed it back to me, saying, "I thank God to see that you are still as worthy of my esteem and confidence as when you entered that monastery, but would you be kind enough to give me the real reason why you have so abruptly separated from the Oblates?" "Yes, my lord, I will give them to you." I handed him the memo, about 30 pages long, which I had prepared. The bishop read very carefully 5 or 6 pages and said, "Are you positive as to the exactness of what you write here?" "Yes, my lord. They are as true and real as I am here." The bishop turned pale and remained a few minutes silent, biting his lips, and after a deep sigh said, "Is it your intention to reveal those sad mysteries to the world? Or can we hope that you will keep that secret?" "My lord," I answered, "I consider myself bound in conscience and honor to keep those things secret, provided I am not forced to reveal them in self-defense against any abuse or persecutions emanating from the Oblates or any other party. But the Oblates cannot say a word against you after the honorable testimony they have given you," promptly answered the bishop. "That is true, my lord. But you know another who has my future destiny in his hands," I answered. "I understand you. But I pledge myself that you have nothing to fear from that quarter, though I frankly would have preferred seeing you work as a member of the Oblates. It may be more according to the will of God that you work in that glorious temperance of which you are evidently the blessed apostle in Canada. I am glad to tell you that I have spoken of you to the Pope, and he requested me to give you a precious medal which bears his most perfect features with a splendid crucifix. His Holiness has graciously attached 300 days for indulgences to everyone who will take the pledge of temperance in kissing the feet of that crucifix. Wait a moment, added the bishop. I will go and get them and present them to you. When the bishop returned, I fell on my knees to receive them and pressed them both to my lips with the utmost respect. He granted me the power to preach and hear confessions all over his diocese, and he dismissed me only after having put his hand on my head and asked God to pour upon me his most abundant benedictions everywhere I should go to work in the holy cause of temperance in Canada.